The opinions expressed by the interviewees on the Upfront and the Prophetic radio show and those providing comments are theirs alone and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Upfront and the Prophetic radio show or any employee thereof. Upfront and the Prophetic radio show is not responsible for the accuracy of any of the information supplied by the interviewees.
Welcome to Upfront in the Prophetic, a production of People of Prophetic Power Ministries. Your hosts, Alan and Francine Fosdick, invite you to tune in to Upfront in the Prophetic every week, where it's natural living in the supernatural, and where the true prophetic is off the chain and right on. Alan and Francine are anointed prophetic ministers of the gospel who are raising up a supernatural generation for an end-time army of believers to establish and advance the kingdom of God with love, signs and wonders, miracles and prophetic abilities, which are needed for the last day harvest. Be prepared to call in with your questions and be ready to chat with their special guests from around the world. Their hunger and thirst for Jesus is radically infectious. Please join us now live with Alan and Francine on this edition of Upfront in the Prophetic. Catch the fire.
Incredible.
Welcome, everyone, to Upfront in the Prophetic, a production of People of Prophetic Power Ministries. That's POPPM.org. I'm your host tonight, Francine Fosdick, and I'm coming to you live from somewhere in Pennsylvania, as we do every week. We are so delighted that you decided to join us tonight. With us tonight, we have a special guest, and I'm so delighted that she's on the show with us tonight. Her name is Laura Wayman. And I tell you, you know, there's a lot of books out there that share a little bit about dementia, but too few of them give really a living experience about living with someone, caring for someone with dementia. And her book, it is absolutely phenomenal, A Loving Approach to Dementia Care. It is so awesome. It gives you the applications of what's going on, approach to how to handle it, and it's so wonderful for those that are caring for a loved one with dementia or know someone who is caring for someone that has dementia or Alzheimer's. And if you do know someone, I urge you to get on the phone right now and get them on this show so that they can listen in to some approaches, some lessons learned, and so they can get this book, again, A Loving Approach to Dementia Care. I want to give you a website that you can just pencil in right now. Get your paper and your pen handy, too. The website is laurawayman.com. That's Laura Way, W-A-Y, man, M-A-N, .com. Write that down because you'll be able to order the book directly from her website. You'll be able to look at her resources, perhaps even ask her to come into your church or to your workplace, to a gathering, so that you too can just grab a hold of how to take care of someone, how to care for someone with dementia. Well, with that, I just want to so thank you, Laura Wayman, for being on the show tonight. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Francine, and I need to thank you for honoring me and requesting that I come share this information with those that are crying out for this kind of help.
Well, I'll tell you, they are crying out. You know, years ago, we really didn't hear that much about dementia, Alzheimer's, and now it seems to be so rampant. And when I heard from our dear friend Peter McKay that you had just finished this book, I felt that it was just so critical for such a time as this that this book be out there in the hands of those that are dealing with the situation. And what I want to ask you is, Laura, what actually inspired you to write this book, A Loving Approach to Dementia Care?
Well, Francine, I had a personal experience that I'm going to talk about a little bit later in the show, but with a loved one who had Alzheimer's. But I really wrote this book so that I could help shift the process of those 16 million caregivers out there caring for a person who has dementia from a burden, which it can so often turn into, to a meaningful journey, a way that they could perhaps find some purpose and a lightness in their heart to make it over the finish line of the most arduous and difficult and challenging role that they will probably ever experience.
Wow, you so put it so well, because so many people who are caregivers of a loved one seems to be carrying such a burden. And what I found through this book, A Loving Approach to Dementia Care, that there were so many stories about individuals that went through and how they coped with it, what they did and what they shouldn't have done. So, again, it's a journey. And you know what I was so impressed with, too, is as we hear, generally Johns Hopkins is very, very selective on the books that they publish. But your book made such an impact to them. I mean, they grabbed a hold of this. Why did they do this with your book?
Well, I'd like to say, Francine, that it was just really a God-led thing, because I began really researching the needs of caregivers as they were caring for someone with dementia. I began to realize that there's just not a lot of encouragement, support, training. Often a family caregiver is thrust into that position without any of that support or training. They just are involuntarily in that situation, and you're going to hear from Pete a little bit later about how that happens often, your spouse, your parent, and then you're in that position. It's difficult. You don't know how to handle it. And so I began to do a lot of research, working hands-on with folks that really needed someone to concentrate on the care needs of that caregiver. And as I was going along, presenting, training, learning, and the book is just a compilation of all those kinds of stories, I began to write them down. And this worked, and this was not successful, but this work, and why was that? And really wrote all of that down. And as I was training caregivers, they would say, you need a book. You need to write this down. So the book came about over the last 10 years, and then it was a matter of getting it published. So I went to the bookstore, and I wrote down all the different publishers and their addresses of who might be interested in this kind of book, and I sent out sample manuscripts, little parts of the book, to 50 different publishers that I thought might be interested, with a self-addressed stamped envelope that they could send it back if they were not. I sent it out to 50 publishers, and I got 49 no's, and Johns Hopkins University Press said yes, and it landed on the desk of the senior editor at Johns Hopkins University Press, who happens to be in the midst of caring for her father in this situation.
Oh, wow.
So she immediately knew the practical aspects, began to read and try those out, and said, you know, this stuff works.
Wow. My gosh. I mean, that is, you just said that this was definitely a God thing. And you can see and hear that it definitely was. I mean, it was so orchestrated by the Lord to land at the desk of someone who was actually going through this. And as they read your book, they found so much help in what they were going through. Wow, this is powerful. I love this stuff. I love it. Oh, my gosh.
I know.
You know, and for those that are listening, too, Laura has been in the field. She has actually holds an associate's in arts degree in gerontology and is a certified social service designee. She knows her stuff. She's been in the industry for quite some time, as she mentioned. So, I mean, gosh, I just so, again, appreciate you being on the air, just sharing all this stuff with us. And, you know, let's talk about dementia. What actually is that? What's going on with dementia?
Well, dementia is actually a word that describes a list of symptoms that must have a cause. In other words, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and stroke, those are all causes of dementia because all of those cause devastation in the brain. And it commonly manifests itself in behaviors that is the dementia, such as confusion or disorientation, perhaps repetitive behaviors. There's difficulty tracking or processing information, anxiety, fear, paranoia, and most often something that many of those that are around someone with dementia, there's progressive short-term memory loss. So what's happening is those functions, those normal functions of our brain that we really take for granted every day, begin to stop functioning normally. And that person's brain, because there's devastation, they begin to suffer the ability to function normally in the world.
Wow. So, I mean, a lot of these symptoms, does it usually happen over a long period of time, or can it be a short period of time? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, since the dementia is a symptom, very much like a cough or fever or symptoms of the flu, it generally comes over a long period of time, and many researchers now are saying that by the time you begin to experience or present those dementia-type behaviors, generally speaking, you probably have had devastation of some kind, whatever's causing the dementia, going on in your brain for anywhere from 8 to 10 years. Then from the time you're diagnosed with what is causing the dementia, you can live in and need care for as long as 2 to 25 years after that.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. My goodness, I didn't realize that it was such a long, I mean, that it could be such a long process, I mean, of someone actually having to care for someone. So, wow, it is a journey, isn't it?
It really is, and those caregivers often are faced with the fact that, you know, they may be absolutely amazing, wonderful people. So many of them are just heroes, truly. They give such wonderful care. But at the end, Alzheimer's disease, for example, is a terminal illness. So the harder they work at caring for someone, the worse that person gets. They continue to decline, and the more care they need. And so it's so challenging because they're going through grief process as they're doing this. They're challenged with the fact that they have little time for themselves, and they become the all-encompassing of every single emotion and need of that person. It's just so overwhelming.
Well, when is caring for someone with dementia, when is that too much? When is it when they have to say, I can't do this anymore?
One of the things that is so difficult for me to get across to these wonderful, amazing caregivers, Francine, is the fact they must start asking for help from the get-go, because it is so difficult to get to the finish line. I like to tell them they need to train as a care athlete, because this is a long, arduous journey, and they need to make sure that they are eating right and that they are getting rest and that they are keeping their bodies healthy as they possibly can, because it's so stressful for them that they must start asking for help immediately and realize that they will have to ask for more and more help as time goes by, because there is a definite state of decline in an Alzheimer's type dementia. It's progressive. It gets worse. There's no cure. There's no prevention. There's no way to slow it down. So they have to kind of pave that care road instead of it being a one-lane gravel road. They have to think of it, let's pave that gravel road so that we can take care of ourselves and that person with dementia as time goes by. So it depends. It's such a unique journey, but they may need to ask for out-of-home placement sooner than someone else in their caregiver support group because everything is unique. And although there's common threads, everybody has different needs and declines at a different pace.
Right. That's important to say. So not every case is exactly the same. One may progress a lot faster than the other. One may be more aggressive than the other. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Exactly. And there could be other physical ailments that come along as well. And that would cause more physical care along with the emotional, social care. And, you know, perhaps it's a very frail spouse who's caring for their husband or wife of many, many years, and they have their own physical challenges. So they need to be able to, as well, care for themselves.
You know, speaking about that, there's a story that really touched my heart about a woman named Peggy. Would you share a little bit about her?
I would love to talk about Peggy. That truly is a story about the ultimate toll. Peggy was just a wonderful mother of five, and she was blessed to be a grandmother of 14. And she was a wife to her husband, Jack. And over the years, Jack and Peggy had carefully planned for retirement, like many of us do. And their goal was to spend time with their kids and their grandkids, and also to be able to travel all over the United States. And they had decided years before that they were going to sell their home when Jack could retire and purchase a recreational vehicle and live the carefree modern-day gypsy life. And, you know, they were blessed and they were able to do that at retirement. But after 15 years, Peggy began to sense that there was a change coming on. She had always been a caregiver at heart and cared for many, many foster children and raised her children. And she decided that a change was coming because Jack's health and eyesight had started to decline. And she was having to do much of the driving, and they decided to sell their home on wheels, and they found a double-wide home. And after they moved in, Peggy began to be very concerned because Jack was beginning to show signs of dementia. And she took him to their family physician and got the devastating news that he had Alzheimer's disease. And she began that long, arduous journey of being a caregiver full-time. You know, she took those marriage vows seriously, and in sickness and in health, she said, I'm going to take care of him. She was truly a caregiver at heart, and she insisted that she could do it, but then her family that was scattered all over the United States with their families of their own, her children, who were now adults, began to hear some uncharacteristic things in her phone calls. She began to say, oh my gosh, this is much harder than I thought. I have spoken with my other friends who have cared for their spouses with dementia, and I did not realize this is so difficult. I'm exhausted. He's not sleeping. He's incontinent. I just don't know. This is much more unmanageable than I realized. And 2 or 3 weeks after that conversation, there was an absolute disaster. Peggy sat down to dinner with Jack, and she suffered a massive heart attack. Now, Jack's reaction to this emergency was slowed by his dementia, which was much more advanced than anyone had realized because Peggy was taking such good care of him. And by the time the neighbors called 911 and the EMTs arrived from faraway emergency services, Peggy was gone. Francine, Peggy was my mother. And after her sudden death, we had to realize what a high level of care she had been giving Jack 24 hours a day. We had no idea.
Wow.
It was just,
from this, I mean, what can you tell those listeners that, you know, are maybe in the same situation your mom was, you know, I mean, so they won't go through this. What did you learn?
Well, I really learned with a very heavy heart that had I been able to reach her before it was too late, that she was my gentle teacher in telling me I had this calling, this absolute urge. I needed to provide information and support and encouragement to those caregivers and to tell them that how important they are in this team that they become. When they become a caregiver, there's the caregiver and the care recipient team. Everyone focuses on that care recipient, that person with the diagnosis, and well, they should. This is a horrific illness. It's horrible. But they often do not realize how much care and assistance and support and encouragement that that caregiver needs. You know, 58% of the time, this is a shocking statistic, 58% of the time, that caregiver gets sick and passes away before the person they are caring for, if that person has some diagnosis of dementia. My mother was one of those statistics. So what this has told me and what I constantly hear her nudging me from above is, keep going, Laura. They need you. And I know when someone reads the book or comes to my presentation and says, no one told me how to do this, I say, I know, and I learned from them too, and I'm going to pass that on down the way.
And that's exactly what you're doing. A loving approach to dementia care is a compilation of so many stories of what you just heard in regards to Peggy, and there's so many more. But it gives you such insight of what to do and what not to do. Now, Laura, tell me and tell the listeners, how does dementia affect the memory storage? What's going on?
Well, we all forget things occasionally, Francine, and short-term memory loss caused by dementia, I need to explain, is very different. You know, let's just imagine for a minute a short-term memory file cabinet that appears every morning on the outermost portion of our brain, and that the memories that you make all day are going to go into this memory file. What you ate for breakfast today, where you parked your car when you arrive at work, and all of those little memories. And then at the end of the day, this cabinet will move in one notch and go a little deeper into your brain towards the center. And then tomorrow it will be replaced with a new outer edge file cabinet the next day and the next. So the more recent files contain short-term memories, and they're on the outermost portion of your brain. And then as it ages, it moves deeper and deeper into the recesses, the farther, deepest part of your brain. And they become long-term memories. So when we talk about how dementia affects memory storage, almost all of us have gone to the mall, parked your car, jumped out, went shopping, and then when we turn to the parking lot, you go, oh, where did I park my car? Have you ever felt that, Francine?
Sure.
And you know how uncomfortable it feels when you can't find your car because you didn't go through the normal protocol, the normal function of filing that memory in today's memory cabinet. So when you go to find it, you're ruffling through all of those files of the day, and it's not there, and it's frightening and disoriented. But if you continue to visualize the rows of memory storage files in the memory room of our brain, with the most recent ones in front and the long-ago ones farther and farther down, it helps you to understand how dementia-challenged people lose the ability to access the most recent memories because those are the first ones that dementia robs them of, starting with the most recent. So then they want to maintain the ability to access memories, but when they go into their memory storage room, the first memory that they might come to, depending on how far back dementia has robbed them of their memories, might be 10 years ago or 20 years ago. Yet they go ahead and access a memory out of that file, and it feels like it should be happening today, because it's the first memory file they came to, and normal protocol says that's the most recent. So that's where they begin to get very time confused and access memories of long ago, and their reality begins to they begin to exist in a reality that is all of the memories and feelings from those memories of their past. And they cannot access current memories because they are gone. Dementia has absolutely stolen them from that memory room.
Wow. Well, tell me then, how can you tell whether someone's symptoms are a, say, a normal sign of getting older or a sign of actually having dementia?
Well, like I was talking about, short-term memory loss, for example, is, you know, I'm sure, Francine, that under normal circumstances, everyone at one time or another has forgot where they put their keys. Have you ever done that? You forgot where you put your keys and you had to go on a key search? When that happens, with a normal function of your brain and short-term memory, you probably would do is say, well, I had my black leather pocketbook with me. I probably put them in there. And you will go backwards in your memories and try and remember what was the last time you had your keys. So let's talk about if dementia has robbed you of the ability to have short-term or current memories like that. If you dropped your keys into your black pocketbook and put it up in the front closet, then you could not remember which pocketbook you had. And so you would begin to search for your keys, but you had no way to backtrack. There was no crumbs to follow, really. And so you would forget what you were looking for, and then by the time you found your keys, you would forget what they were for. And so when someone starts to have consistent memory loss of short-term memory, repeating themselves, and they can't remember even a familiar pathway, perhaps they've always driven down to Walgreens on the corner, and now they get lost just driving four blocks, and that before was very normal, you begin to see the lack of normal functioning in memory, in processing information, in remembering who and where they are or who's around them. All of those things is not normal aging. Just occasional memory loss is normal for all of us to experience.
Well, how about if, say that you have a parent, an elderly parent, and they ask you a question of when are you going to the store? And I say, tomorrow afternoon I'm going to go to the store. And then a couple hours later they say, when did you say you were going to the store? And they ask it several times. Is that a normal, like, behavior of getting older, or is that, like, something that may be a tip-off?
I think that I would consider that a tip-off, but I would also start to observe whether they are also doing some of the other things that we listed, whether they are presenting some other signs of dementia, because that is going to be helpful for you to start to assess whether they need to see a physician. And I usually suggest that they see a physician that's familiar with neurology and dementia and normal brain function. Because if you're seeing those little signs, it could very well be a red flag, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's Alzheimer's. Like I was talking about earlier, if you have the flu, you might have several different symptoms that are being caused by the flu. You might have a cough or fever, and that you would want to find out what is causing the cough or fever, correct? And so you go to your physician, you have influenza, and this is what we can do for it. However, if you have a cough, that doesn't necessarily mean that you automatically have lung cancer. So if you're showing signs and symptoms that could be categorized as dementia, then I like to encourage the caregiver, if you're seeing that in a loved one, to get to a physician so you can start working on that as soon as possible and not just push it out of your mind that it could possibly just be aging, The other insidious thing about dementia is I like to explain it that their brain is now going to look like a piece of Swiss cheese. And you know how when you hold a piece of Swiss cheese, there's random holes and random cheese. So they go to function, go ask their brain to function in a normal way, and they may have cheese or they may have a hole. So what that caregiver sees often is a cheese moment where they're very, very cognitive and look normal, and they say, the caregiver says, oh, mom's okay, I was just imagining it. And then 10 minutes later, they go to do this exact same function, and there's a hole there because dementia has robbed them of that particular portion of their functionality, and they will be completely demented. And so then that person goes, well, mom is that bad, and now I need to do something. So they go about doing something next day, mom has a cheese moment. So it's very difficult. When you start to see that, you need to immediately take action and don't allow yourself to go into denial and say, oh, she's not that bad, because you do not know what happens when you are not there or when they're accessing a hole and cheese.
Right. That's good. That's a great point to bring up. Very important. Wow. Well, you know, I've often wondered that with someone who has dementia, are they sensitive to how the caregiver is feeling? I mean, do they take on a different light if say, that the caregiver is kind of stressed that day? How do they react, or do they not react?
Well, they begin to utilize much more intuition and feeling-based reactions. As they lose the ability to process the language that they have heard all their life, we're used to speaking what we're feeling or speaking what our needs are. When you lose the ability to describe what you're feeling or ask for your needs, you begin to rely more and more on just plain feelings. It boils down to that. And they begin to only hear what you are feeling rather than hearing what you are saying, because they can't process that as well. So what happens is that it is now your job as a caregiver to constantly surround them with feelings of safety, security, feelings of value, and feelings of love. Because if you bring into them stress, anxiety, they will mirror that back to you because they are looking to you to be a Sherpa in their dementia wonderland and telling them how they should be feeling about something. So it's important that you know that you are now really communicating on a deep feeling level way beyond what you are saying or trying to express to them. They will know what you are feeling.
Wow, you know, that just brought up so much to me because, you know, when we talk about intimacy with a loved one, you know, it's when you're communicating in such a deeper manner. And what you're saying right here is that's how they're communicating, and that's how we are to communicate with them, is in such a deeper manner to where they're mirroring what we bring to them. So if we're joyful and showing them love and so forth, that they too will mirror that in their own like reactions. Even if they can't speak, you can see it on their face and so forth, right?
Right, exactly. And Maya Angelou has a wonderful poem that I really feel like is so valuable in this situation. She says, people may remember what you said, and people may remember what you did, but they will never, ever, ever forget how you made them feel. And I've seen that happen so many times. I can see on that person's face with dementia, if a caregiver gets annoyed or frustrated or resentful, that fear of, I don't know why I'm making my loved one unhappy, because they don't understand, they can't have that self-judgment, and it's frightening to them. And then that's when you start to see some real bizarre behaviors, really, because they are feeling, but they don't know how to react, and they can't explain it. It must be a very frightening place to be.
Oh, gosh. I believe that it is, because our next story is about a couple that I knew for some time, I believe a little over 15 years. And when I knew this woman who happened to, it was the beginning stages of dementia, and when we met in Florida one time, she wanted me to pray for her, and I could sense the fear in her speech and her fear of, I'm starting to forget things, and please pray for me. And I have to say that her husband, whom I'm going to have share her story, Pete, was such a, I get emotional, oh, sorry, but he was such a man of integrity, a man that truly kept his vows pure, and no matter how she progressed, he was there with her, and he was gentle with her. I mean, we saw it firsthand, and so I want to introduce him, Pete McKay. Pete, are you on the air?
Yeah, that's kind of hard to follow, but I'm here.
Well, Pete, this has been a journey for you, and I'd like for you to share. I mean, you have, there's a segment of your story in Laura's book, and would you share a little bit of that with the listeners today?
Sure. Thanks, Francine, and thanks, Laura, and thanks for writing the book. In fact, Margie was my 10. She's chapter 10 in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I met Margie after a tour in Vietnam. The U.S. Navy sent me up to Brunswick, Maine, to an air station there. And one day I met Margie, and she came by with her girlfriend, and they were going somewhere with a couple of dates, and we got to talking and kind of hit it off. But we visited, we enjoyed each other, and then eventually we started dating. And we were dating 6 months and fell madly in love. And to make a long story short, Margie and I decided to get married. She was 19 and I was 26. And I fell madly in love. We got married and came back to my home in California. And it was a long run for her, but she was excited, and we had the wonderful marriage that we did, and a lot of things happened. We started a couple of businesses together. She ran my office. She was very smart, very good with people, a loving person, literally. And people loved Margie because of who she was and how she could turn a negative person around in a New York second. And she was so passionate about everything she did. And we had that kind of a marriage. And I had a family, a brother and four sisters. And we'd get together and they'd say, you know, 5, 10, 20, 30, 35 years into the marriage, they'd say, what is up with you two? You act like newlyweds. Well, I said, that's because we still love each other. And I said, we have a wonderful life together. And we do. And we did. But then I saw things start to change. And unfortunately, we were caregivers for her parents. Both of them passed away of Alzheimer's. Her father at the age of 85 and her mother at the age of 82. And they were 5 years apart from each other. And then Margie got sick. And I didn't know. It came on to a point where I was so close to Margie that I could not really see the forest for the trees. And my sisters were picking up things here and there. And then all of a sudden, she backed out of the driveway one day and backed into the oak tree. She turned left instead of right. And then one day, I got a call from California Highway Patrol on her cell phone dialing me up because she was on the side of the freeway crying because she couldn't find our daughter's home. And she used to go every month and do for 10 years to do crafts for the third-grade kids that are our daughter was teaching, and had great time.
When did you start to see, like, how old was Margie when she started to go into, where she wasn't remembering things?
Well, you know, I detected that something wasn't right with the memory, and so I went to a regular doctor, and I asked, is there some kind of a test? And she said, well, I'm not a neurologist, but I'll tell you, we do have some kind of a test, questions and answers thing. And while I'm doing her physical for her, let me go through that. And bottom line is, she failed miserably, and she started to cry about it. And I saw her going down, and I realized that, well, I've got to do whatever I can. And fortunately, thank God, I worked out of my home. But it became harder and harder to do that. We lived on 2.5 acres, and Margie was a gardener. She was the president of one of the garden club of the city that we lived in at one time. And she loved the outdoors. And we just went together all the time and did things. But I saw her slipping, and I saw things going on. And then I realized, we better get off this land. She stopped doing everything. And so we put our home up for sale. We sold just before the market fell apart on real estate, and we moved. But that was the most difficult thing in the world. She really went downhill after that, simply because we changed her environment. And by the way, when we met you, Francine, back in Florida, I decided that all her relatives in Maine and mine in upstate New York and all over Vermont, that we wanted to go say goodbye. And that's what I was saying, because she was getting worse. She would literally get up at night and wonder who this guy was in the same bed with her, me, and doing all kinds of crazy things. And pretty soon, her compartment of her memory went back to the point where she didn't even know me anymore, and she thought I was a stranger in her home. She'd run to the neighbors, and she ran away about 45 times. And I found her about 25 times, and the police found her the other times. But I was becoming a complete stress case. I mean, I didn't know what to do or how to handle it, and most of the people I knew didn't know anything either. And then I was referred to a friend of mine. Well, somebody I was referred to referred me to Laura because of all the difficulty, and thank God for Laura, because when I met her, she helped turn Margie around. Our daughter Jennifer and I met Laura at a nursing home. We had to put her in because she got so combative and running down highways and these kinds of things. And I was just a basket case. But she was having a tough time there. And she had caregivers that didn't know what they were doing in that nursing home. They're minimum wage people. Unfortunately, they hadn't been trained. And Laura does these training programs and seminars and workshops that are phenomenal. But most people, you know, haven't been aware of them yet. And we're talking about doing webinars and these kinds of things to get her on nationwide. But anyway, in a very short period of time, Laura was able to turn Margie around because of how she handled her and what she said and what she did. I was able to get her out of that nursing home because it was a bad, bad place to be, and get her closer to me. And I visited her regularly. But she was going downhill. And unfortunately, I lost my wife last August to the effects of dementia, but she was only 60 years old. She had early onset. She was diagnosed with memory problems back at the age of 53. And so I lost her, but we had 41 and a half years of marriage, and 38 of them were just phenomenal. They were great. And, I missed her terribly, obviously, in the nursing home. But once she passed away, you never think that you're going to miss her more. But, you know, I really did.
And you really did. And actually, my husband and I, Alan and I, had the wonderful opportunity to go visit Margie a month prior to her passing at the home. And we prayed for her. And my husband saw this huge angel that was hovering over by her. And I could sense such peace on her and such rest within her. And it was just a wonderful time that we had there, spending about 15, 20 minutes with her. And now she's with the Lord. And I want to encourage those that are listening tonight to the show, maybe later on archive. This book by Laura Wayman is absolutely phenomenal, A Loving Approach to Dementia Care. I guarantee that if you get this book for those that you love, for those that you know that are going through this that are our caregiver for someone that has dementia will be so blessed and thankful that you got them this book. But I also want you to know
that
the power, huh?
Very quickly, I just want to let you know the day that that Margie ran away for the last time, the sheriffs of our county would not allow me to take her back home, and so I had to get our daughter. And the reason I tell you this story, caregivers out there listening, is that I was such a mess after Margie left that I called my sister and told her my symptoms, and she said, get to the hospital immediately. I went to the local hospital in the emergency room, and my blood pressure was 225 over 200, and it took them 4 hours to get it down. And because you gotta take a look at the book. You gotta do something right, because nobody out there, the medical profession, doesn't understand a lot of what Laura does. So I absolutely get the book.
Absolutely, Pete. And I think there was this like a little break in the stream, but again, please, as Pete mentioned, get the book. It will help you. And know, too, that the power of prayer really works. Gather around those that believe in the power of the Most High, Jesus Christ, to come alongside of you and to pray for you, to intercede for you. Prayer really does work. We've heard some awesome testimonies of prayer that have actually slowed down dementia and actually have healed some as well. So, again, the book, A Loving Approach to Dementia Care. And, Laura, you know, what do you do when an adult with a dementia has a loved one who passed away and they don't know it? How do you share that with them, or do you not share that with them? Because I've heard this question quite often, and they didn't know how to handle that.
Absolutely. That's very difficult, because we need to realize that person exists in past memories and feelings, and they possibly could be existing in the past way beyond the period of time their loved one, another loved one whom they're talking about, perhaps their sister, has passed away. So they're back in memories of their sister when they were younger, and the memories that that brings up of being around that sister or spending time with them. And in their existence and reality of past memories and feelings, that is very real to them. And if let's just say that your mom says to you, oh, my sister's coming, we're going shopping, and you know that your mom's sister, your aunt, passed away 10 years ago. You can handle that in different ways, but what I have observed is that it's much easier on that person with dementia whose brain is not functioning normally anymore if you don't burden them with information they can no longer handle. And if you were to say to your mom, oh, mom, your sister is gone. She passed away. She had pneumonia 10 years ago, and she was in the hospital, and she passed away. You will get one of two reactions, because their brain is no longer operating on the same level in reality as yours. You will hear them say, oh, my goodness, when did that happen? That's terrible. Why didn't you tell me? Because they would not have a memory of it, and they would grieve. Or you would get, no way, she just called me and said she was coming shopping, because in their reality, that's actually what happened. They have memories of that,
right.
And it seems to them like it should be right now. So I like to say you only tell them what they can handle, and they can handle less and less. And to prevent them from having to constantly go through that grieving process, I like to say, why don't you just say something? When was the last time you went shopping with your sister? You love doing that. Now, that's not saying they're not, that you're not telling them the information. You're just redirecting them back to those memories that are pleasant for them. And so you can just buy time a little bit rather than giving them information that they can't handle, and then they grieve, and then they forget, and then they're back at the same place, and they grieve, and it's this unresolved circle of grief. So it's just, to me, it just feels kinder. And yes, it feels like we're often lying to them. And of course, your mother probably said, you don't lie to me. You tell the truth. But what we need to have is a little different perception of the fact that their reality now is different, and the truths that they can understand may be very different than the reality that we exist in. And so it's just a kinder, gentler, more loving approach to keep them from being upset when we can't help them from feeling that way.
That's a good point. Absolutely. Wow. Well, tell us some lessons from Hazel.
Oh, Hazel. I love the story of Hazel. Hazel was a resident at a community and a hospice nurse who I had trained. I like to think that I have folks that I can train that can go out and help other people. But this particular hospice nurse was in a assisted living, a memory care community, and the hospice nurse was there training the staff. And Hazel came in and wanted to be a part of this whole meeting because Hazel had dementia. She lived in this memory care community, but she saw this gathering and she felt that she, you know, she lived there. Why shouldn't she be a part of it? She came in and the hospice nurse was very wise because Hazel had started to interrupt the meeting, and the hospice nurse was just in the middle of the training talking about the things that I had taught her about going into their world and providing them with value. And the staff wanted to get up and say, oh, well, Hazel shouldn't be in here. And the hospice nurse was very wise. She said, no, let's let her stay here. She kept trying to get up and leave. And the hospice nurse said, let's have her be a part of this. And she put in practice the technique that I had told her, and she got Hazel interested in what the meeting was about. So she introduced herself to Hazel and then calmly and politely said to Hazel, well, where are you going, Hazel? And she explained because she had to leave because she had to go do her business. And with those words, she gave the hospice nurse a clue on how to handle the situation and a little door opening into her dementia world. And she demonstrated for the class how the affirmative response method of communication, which is the method that I teach, how it works. And so she shared with Hazel that they were holding a meeting regarding a new business and would love to have her sit down and join them. Immediately, Hazel, with great enthusiasm, she sat right down, and she began to really want to be involved. So while the rest of the class was sitting there, the nurse asked Hazel about what her upcoming entrepreneur venture was, and Hazel told the class that she wanted to open a baby store and supply products to her clients. This probably was something from Hazel's past, either a dream or something that she had done. And so they all became very involved, asking her, well, how would you price them and what kinds of products would you have? And Hazel, with very clear, concise words and stories, she had this all in her head, and she shared, and they talked about how she would advertise, and Hazel was so involved. She felt so much value. It was just something that she felt so proud she could talk about, and became very involved, and the students were amazed at how going into her dementia wonderland and existing in her reality gave them so much insight about her perception of the world and the ability to communicate with her. It was such a great example of how the affirmative response method of communication really works.
Wow, and it really does. You taught this nurse how to tap in to the world of any individual that has dementia or Alzheimer's. But I'd like to even add on to that you can even do this with someone who does not have dementia. When you engage in someone's dream and who that person is, their countenance, their whole facial expression changes. And I think that so many of us in today's world are so consumed with ourselves and what we have to say that the individual that we're trying to listen to, we really don't listen. And it pulls them away. And I just love the story because I think, again, it relates not only to someone who has dementia, but really to all of us, to allow us to really think about our conversation and tapping into the love of what somebody else is passionate about.
Absolutely. And it all boils down, Francine, to four basic feelings. We all want to feel loved. We want to feel like that we provide value into our community, into our family. We want to feel safe and we want to feel secure. And like you were talking about, it just touched my heart so much. When we pray, we're asking for those very things, and often we're blessed with that. And then when we approach someone with dementia who is in a very different place and perhaps frightened, more than likely confused, they also want to feel like we're going to impart with them those very same feelings. That's what's going to help to keep them from being so frightened, from being so confused. It's just that simple communication that we've been blessed with when we ask for it, and then we just kind of pay it forward.
Amen. Oh, I love it. I love it. And there's also a story in there, too, that I couldn't help but laugh, you know, and it's about Virginia, the importance of laughter. Yes. Would you share that, too?
Absolutely, because that particular experience is a perfect example about how we need to remember to watch for humor. But Virginia was a wonderful daughter caregiver who brought her mom to her home to care for her, and her mother was declining and sometimes very difficult, but Virginia was just prevailing, and one morning she was up making breakfast for her mother, and she heard quite a ruckus coming down the hall, and her mother was just cussing like a sailor, which was really out of a character for her in the first place, and she was just saying, "My pants, I can't get my pants on there. What is the matter?" And she's just so angry. And so Virginia came around the corner and looked down the hall, and here was her wonderful mother with dementia coming down the hallway trying to put her shirt on her legs. She had her legs through the sleeves of her blouse and was valiantly trying to pull them up and wear them as pants. And Virginia had to just stifle a laugh and say, "Oh, Mom, I must have shrunk your pants," rather than trying to argue with her, because you can never win an argument with someone with dementia, even in a humorous situation. And she said, "Let me help you. I must have washed your pants in hot water. I so apologize." And she took her back to the bedroom and peeled the sleeves off of her mother's legs, helped her get dressed, brought her back into the kitchen, sat her down for her breakfast, went around the corner, and laughed until tears rolled down her face. Sometimes someone with dementia can do great stand-up comedy, but we have to laugh because sometimes that's the only way to make it through.
It's so true. It's so true. And gosh, I tell you, again, I want to let everybody know to head on over to Laura Wayman. That's Laura, L-A-U-R-A, Way, W-A-Y, Man, MAN.com. Head on over there, check out her website, get the book for yourself. If you know anyone that is a caregiver for someone that has Alzheimer's or dementia, please get the book for them. They will just be so grateful. Pray for them too. They really need your encouragement and for you to come alongside and lift them up. They so need that. You know, what are some of the practical tips, Laura, for the caregivers on balancing their needs and their loved ones with dementia? Because you hear so many times that it's just so demanding caring for someone with dementia. The caregiver is tired so much of the time because they're trying to care for every single need that their parent or a loved one has in regards to dementia. How can they balance this and not feel guilty? And I know guilty is not probably the right word, but they feel that, my gosh, I'm not doing enough, and actually they are doing so much and so much more.
I really want to encourage that caregiver to know that whatever the situation, they are not doing something that's wrong. But if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. So when you are struggling with challenges and you're trying to communicate with your loved one and they've got that frown on their face or they're being resistant to care, all you need to do is tell yourself to back up, take a deep breath, and try a different approach. Don't be afraid to ask for help. There's lots of resources out there. I know that you probably have within reach, more than likely, other people who want to help. But often you have to ask, and you have to ask them specifically how they can help you. Perhaps there is a wonderful neighbor who has offered in the past to run to the grocery store for you or to help with a little bit of the yard work. Don't be afraid to allow people to come in and help because you need help and it's okay. It does not admit failure in any way. And ask for those resources, both professional, family members. If you have family members who are saying, I don't know what to do, I don't know how to help, then, you know, sit down and make a list. Perhaps you have a family member who's a really good listener that lives far away, but a once-a-day phone call of encouragement can be a way that they can help. Or perhaps you have a doer in the family that just really would like to come over and give you respite, and while they're there, perhaps do a little ironing and play some cards with your loved ones, or perhaps take a walk. You know, that doer would like to get in and help by doing. Allow them to help you. And it's very important that that caregiver take a minimum of 30 minutes a day doing something that feels good to them, that relaxes them, that gets them away from that role as a caregiver. And 30 minutes a day is a minimum. But, you know, pick up a really good book that is encouraging and inspiring. Take a long soak in a bubble bath. Take a walk 30 minutes a day or do an exercise class. And when you go to do that, make sure you've got someone who's going to give you respite and allow you to be away from that caregiving for a minimum of 30 minutes a day. That's going to be how you're going to start to ask for those resources of support. And if you are seeing the very early signs that we talked about earlier of dementia, immediately be proactive. I have to say that Pete, I admire him so much because he was proactive. When he started to see these signs, he started to take Margie to physicians, to take her to family. He didn't deny that it was happening. He knew something wasn't right. And although he couldn't change the course, he could at least try and learn how to manage, and he did so wonderfully and bravely and lovingly try to manage that situation as best he could. But even with that, Francine, he still suffered from physical stress and physical consequences from that stress. So even when you're asking for help, be aware that that stress is still taking a toll on you, your body. It takes a toll on relationships. So don't be afraid to ask for help.
That's good, Laura. And, you know, when they're taking care of that person with dementia and it just gets to where it's way too much and they have to put that person into a facility, what should they look for in a facility that would be the best for their loved one?
That is a really tough question, because often, like we talked about earlier, that those caregivers feel so much guilt that they're having to access additional help. But I want them to think about if that their loved one had, for example, a brain tumor, and that brain tumor could extend their loved one's life if they took their loved one to a brain surgeon, and that brain surgeon could take out that tumor. But there would still be a period of time when that person would have to go through rest or rehabilitation. They would not hesitate to ask for that kind of help to extend their loved one's life. When they have to go to a memory care community and ask for to extend their loved one's quality of life by accessing out-of-home care, It's exactly the same principle. They're asking for an additional level of care that they cannot provide at home for many reasons, but that does not make them a failure. It just means that they are doing their job as a caregiver to access outside help. And what they want to look for is a place that values training of the staff and has, the majority of the time, has staff with a high retention rate. That staff has been there for a long time. There's not a lot of turnover. They have a open mind to more training. We can never learn enough about this. And not necessarily, although it's wonderful, to have that fancy chandelier in the foyer when they first walk in. They want to see what the care is about. And the surroundings, of course, should be clean and neat and well-maintained so that that person is in a safe environment. But what you're looking for is the care, the staff, their approach. How well are they trained? Do they understand dementia? You know, Francine, my book is not big, and it can be read in just a few hours. And a staff member could learn a lot, a professional caregiver could learn a lot from just reading the book of how to approach someone. And so it's not something that takes a degree, a college degree, to be able to have this loving approach. And I know Pete will agree with me. The first place where his loving wife, Margie, was, they did not understand this approach at all, and you can read that in that chapter 10. But I offered to help them, and they refused. They said they had enough training. And the simple question I asked was, then, why can't you manage this situation? And it really kind of boiled down to the fact that they didn't realize how simple and how affordable this training could have been. Do you agree with that, Pete?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So had you to do it, this over, you would have looked for that kind of training from the very beginning. And we all have choices, even in skilled nursing. You can say to the hospital, if they're wanting you to put a loved one in skilled nursing, you can say, I want to know more about the training aspect. Are they trained in dementia? You can say that. You don't have to go somewhere that a hospital is telling you that you have to go to. You have a choice. And so you want to, and it just takes a little research. You want to find out, how are you trained? And I would love to say, because, of course, I truly believe in my heart that my training is easy to understand and it's easy to utilize and it works. You know, even if you just were to say, would you mind having your staff read this book, if nothing else?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Or to even have you, Laura, come in and speak to their staff, train their staff, that would be highly beneficial. If any of you listening tonight are dealing with someone that has dementia, again, I urge you to get the book. I really urge you to get the book. And if you know someone that is dealing with it, get the book for them. The caregivers at the facility, get them the book. It's so critical at this time. And again, I also want to mention the power of prayer and the healing power that God has on all of us. You can pray for this individual to be whole and healed, and it can happen. It can happen. But if you don't pray, you'll never know. And again, pray for those that are the caregivers. They so need encouragement. If you can give them a break, like Laura said, 30 minutes, hey, Joe, go out and, you know, go driving around, go walking around, run, do whatever you want for 30 minutes, an hour. Hey, I'm here. I'm going to take care of it. That would be such a blessing and such a gift for that individual. Laura, gosh, the time is just really flying by. Is there any other information that you would like to give the listeners tonight, anything that, any other tips or nuggets for those that are listening?
I would really, once again, love to have an opportunity to help that caregiver know how important they are in this relationship. And I like to tell just a really quick little parable about that. When you go on an airplane and that flight attendant stands in front of you before you take off and gives you that wonderful safety talk, they say, if that oxygen mask drops down in flight in front of you and you are traveling with someone who is younger and needs assistance or an older person who needs assistance, that flight attendant will say, put that oxygen mask on you first. Because if you pass out, you can't care for anyone else who may need you. And that caregiver right now needs to put their arms around themselves and give themselves a big hug, those heroes. And remember, you have to train for this and take care of yourself and ask other people to help you because you are so important. You are the other half of this whole team that needs to be lifted up and supported on this horrible, horrendous, arduous journey of dementia care.
Again tonight we had Laura Wayman. Laura, thank you so much for being on the show. We so appreciate it. Hey, Pete, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for sharing a little bit about
thank
your journey
you.
With Margie.
Thank
Amen.
You so much.
You're welcome, guys. And, hey, all those listeners out there, we want to thank you so much for joining us on Upfront in the Prophetic Radio. You know, you can also tap into our other broadcasts. Just log on to poppm.org. You'll be able to listen to the other archive broadcasts. Check out on our event page when we have another guest that's going to be on. If you have another guest that you would like us to have on the air, please have them contact us at poppm.org, and we'll get a hold of them and chat with them, and we'll have our research department go over their material and research them out and see about having them on the show. And if you have not made the Lord of your life, I urge you today, right now, just to open up your mouth and say, Jesus, I believe you died on the cross for me, that you drank the cup of suffering, you took it upon your body, that I may live and have eternal life with you, Lord Father. I believe that this is true and that you died on the third day and rose again. I believe that you are my Savior, my Lord, and that you are my everything. If you just said that within your heart and really meant it, you are now born again, as they say. Hallelujah. Bless God. It's so exciting. And you know what? Being a Christian is a journey. It is. And that's why we have these individuals, these generals of the faith, come aboard and share their experiences. Laura shared an experience about her mom, who is so dear to her, and what she went through in regards to dementia care with her father. So I just thank you so much for being a part of the show. The audience, thank you so much, and I look forward to seeing you on the air with us again, hearing us again on Upfront in the Prophetic. Please, again, check out our website, poppm.org. We're actually working on getting our training site up and running here in the next couple of months. Bless God. If you'd like to be a part of it, check out our website, and you'll get to know a little bit more. We're going to end the show with Rick Pino, and This Is Why I'm Alive. Bless God, everyone. Talk to you later. May my love
Philippines eyes, and don't best friends tell each other secrets. Oh, this is why.